Hello and welcome back to Unlocking Markets, our RBC Blue Bay podcast series. This is where we bring you experts from across the firm to provide their opinions on the macro environment and discuss how top-down themes help influence the way they invest. I'm Mike Reed, Head of Global Financial Institutions. Today, I'm going to be talking to Phil Langham, who is both a Senior Portfolio Manager and Head of our Emerging Market Equities team. The term emerging markets covers a broad and disparate group of countries with very different economies. This can make investing in them quite challenging. In today's podcast, we'll be covering a range of topics that we believe all investors involved in EM equities should be thinking about right now. So welcome, Phil.
Thank you, Mike.
So kicking off, as investors, we are often reminded that there is no direct linkage between GDP growth and stock market performance. And this lack of correlation has been particularly stark within emerging markets versus their developed peers over the last decade, as EM equities have significantly underperformed despite strong economic growth. The obvious question I often hear from clients is, why should now be different?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at the relative performance of emerging markets compared to developed markets over the last 40 years, what we've seen is that that relative performance tends to occur in very long cycles, cycles that have lasted around 8 to 12 years. The last cycle of EM underperformance, or the current cycle of EM underperformance, has been particularly stark in terms of its length, currently at around 13 years. Why should 2025 be any different? It's always difficult to pinpoint exact turning points, but a few reasons why we think that we are approaching the turning point of emerging market underperformance would be, first of all, relative earnings and relative GDP growth. If we look at most of the last decade, we have seen the earnings growth has been disappointing in emerging markets, and relative GDP growth has also been coming off. That seems to be changing, both in terms of relative GDP growth, which is starting to improve, but also earnings growth over the next 2 years for emerging markets is expected to be stronger than for developed markets. Secondly, China. China, particularly in the last 3 years, has been a significant overhang for emerging markets, and at its peak represented about 44% of the emerging market equity index. It's been weak for a number of different reasons, but we would say the most important reason has been government or lack of government support for the economy. That seems to be changing. Certainly the rhetoric that we're hearing coming out from China would seem to suggest that we're starting to see significant support both for the private sector and for the economy. And we're starting to see meaningful signs that that should have an impact overall on the market. And the third factor is valuation. Now, while valuation isn't a very good timing tool, we do see that emerging markets, both in PE terms and price to book terms, are at record lows compared to developed markets. So in PE terms at around a 40% discount, in price to book terms at around a 50% discount.
Well, those all sound quite compelling arguments, but I guess one of the pushbacks will be, you know, what's happening in the US. Donald Trump has now been reinstated as president of the United States, and there's been a lot of talk of tariffs, which I suspect could significantly impact many emerging market countries who rely heavily on exports to the US. What implications do you expect from his presidency, and how are you positioning your funds to both protect and profit from the anticipated changes?
Yes, you're right. You know, Donald Trump has certainly been talking about implementing tariffs. It's not clear exactly in what form these tariffs will come. Initially, certainly there was a lot of talk of universal tariffs, but increasingly it seems to be the case that these tariffs are more likely to be targeted and more likely to be used as a negotiating tool. What's interesting is that if we look at what's happened to emerging markets overall, since we first started seeing the trade war when Trump was first elected. We see overall that there's been relatively mixed fortunes, but for the most part, emerging markets have actually navigated the trade war quite well. First of all, looking at China, which would seem to be the country that's the most impacted. If we looked at what's happened to China in terms of trade in recent years, we've seen that exports as a percentage of GDP to the US have fallen from around 20% to around 15%. But at the same time, we've seen huge growth in exports to other emerging markets. We're actually seeing China's exports overall as a share of global exports increase, and China is seeing record trade surpluses. We've also seen a lot of other emerging markets benefit as manufacturing has moved away from China to other EMs, such as those in Southeast Asia and Mexico. So the picture isn't entirely clear. In terms of what we're doing, we still feel that it makes sense to be somewhat cautious on exporting industries and certainly those that are more linked to manufacturing. We tend to favor more domestic industries and those that can grow from the domestic demand growth within emerging markets.
That's an interesting take, and see how you're actually thinking about the interlinking of the emerging markets more broadly, rather than just seeing them as a supplier to the, say, the G7. But I guess sort of segueing, but still starting, sitting with the US, is the fortunes of emerging market equities are often linked to the strength or weakness of the US dollar. And but over recent years, the dollar has been very strong, and this has been identified as one of the causes of EM equity underperformance. I mean, is this a fair assessment? And how do you envisage the US rate cycle over the next 12, 18 months will impact emerging markets going forward?
Yeah, it is a completely fair assessment. What we've seen historically is that there is a very strong link between the performance of the US dollar and the perform or the relative performance of emerging markets. And generally, emerging markets do much better in a weak US dollar environment. So, for example, we saw between 2001 and 2010, when the dollar was weak, emerging market relative performance was very strong, and vice versa in the last 12 years. We've had a very unusual period or unusually long period of dollar strength in the last 11 or 12 years. And definitely, as you touch on, one of the factors that will impact the dollar is the US rate cycle. In terms of where we go from here, generally what we would expect is that lower rates would lead to a weaker dollar. It's really unclear exactly where we are in terms of the US rate cycle. Certainly, there are some people who fear that there could be more US inflation, and that may mean that US rates don't continue to fall as much as some market participants would expect. What we saw in terms of last year was that the initial reaction to Donald Trump being elected was further US dollar strength. Our view, though, would be that from here, there are a number of reasons why we would feel that the US dollar may actually start to weaken over coming years. So, first of all, valuation. If we look at the US dollar, it really is looking extremely expensive on most valuation measures. Secondly, the US has a growing current account and fiscal deficit. And that compares to emerging markets where you see very large current account surpluses. And thirdly, if we look at Donald Trump's overall policy, he very much wants to see US industry become more competitive and would like to see a weaker US dollar. So the dollar strength that we've seen recently very much goes against the sort of policy that he would like going forward.
That's interesting there, but I suppose what I'd like to look at now is some of the geopolitical issues, and we've seen tensions appearing to rise. We have conflict in the Middle East and in Ukraine, and some growing worries in the South China Sea with Taiwan and China. But within EM economies, who do you believe are the winners and losers out of where we are now or where you foresee?
I mean, geopolitical tensions have certainly risen over recent years. What we've often seen historically is that markets in the short term can overreact to geopolitical tensions. In terms of the two sort of big ones that we see at the moment, so the Russia-Ukraine war and Middle East, what's interesting is that outside of Russia, the Russia-Ukraine war has been relatively contained, and in many ways, some emerging markets have really benefited from lower oil prices as Russia has started exporting oil to countries such as India and China. In terms of the Middle East, we've seen that the impact has been, again, relatively contained. We have seen some weakness in Middle Eastern consumer markets, but outside of that, the impact again has been relatively contained. And I'd say that in terms of both conflicts, our view would be that the most likely outcome would be perhaps more of a status quo. In terms of emerging markets overall, the risk would really be in terms of geopolitical events, if we were to see an extended elevated period of a higher oil price. That hasn't been the case in recent years. But if we were to see that, that's where we would start to see or that's where we would start to have an impact. And the markets that would be particularly affected would be obviously the big oil importers, particularly those in Asia, countries such as India. Also, Turkey would be another very large oil importer.
Okay, so let's move on from the big picture now and let's go into something a little bit more granular. You touched on a couple of sectors earlier in the conversation which you liked, and you know which ones you were trying to avoid, but maybe could we dig in a little deeper within that? Within emerging markets, where are you and your team most excited about today? Where do you really see the winners are going to come?
Well, we do like, as I touched on earlier, domestic sectors which benefit from rising incomes, demographics, urbanization, the reforms that we're seeing. And I'd say within domestic sectors, we particularly like two sectors. So, first of all, consumer staples. Consumer staples have derated in recent years, and from a valuation perspective, look very attractive currently. We also tend to like a lot of the qualities of consumer staples stocks. So they tend to be very cash generative, have high returns, strong brands, very steady growth. Another sector that I'd say we like is financials. Within emerging markets, there's a real structural theme in financials in terms of relatively low penetration. But also, one of the attractions that we see within the financial sector is that the very best financials, so the best banks or the best insurance companies, are really able to maintain their competitive advantage over very long periods of time. A second factor that we would say really supports financials for emerging markets is that we generally see within emerging markets very high real rates. And as interest rates are expected to come down in emerging markets, the sector that will perhaps benefit the most will be financials.
Okay. Again, it's great to hear sort of more granular type thoughts on what you're actually doing. So we talked about the Middle East and we talked about it in more, sort of, a slightly more negative term in the terms of the conflicts there. But it does continue to grow in economic terms and is becoming an increasing weight, I believe, in EM equity benchmarks. So you'll be focusing on it more. So we've also witnessed the region's attempts to diversify away from a reliance on hydrocarbons into sectors such as leisure, transport, financial services, even into sport now. What are your thoughts on opportunities in the region?
Yes. So, I mean, you're right. We've seen the Middle Eastern weight within emerging markets substantially increase in recent years. And now it represents around 7% of the overall weight for emerging markets equities. And in terms of reforms, we are seeing reforms throughout the Middle East, but particularly in Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia, I'd say, has been quite successful so far in terms of diversifying away from oil. Currently, non-oil GDP as a percentage of overall GDP is around 50%. And we're also seeing a number of other reforms that are really helping overall growth. So a good example within Saudi Arabia would be female participation within the workforce, which has grown again quite substantially and is now at about 35%. So overall, we would say that the top-down outlook for the Middle East as a result of a lot of these reforms looks pretty strong. Our main concern with the Middle East is more from a bottom-up point of view. We do feel that when we look at a lot of the stocks, that the quality of stocks still isn't the same as we see outside of a region. So the quality of management, the quality of corporate governance, the earnings quality overall. And our main caution on the Middle East is more from a bottom-up point of view than from a top-down point of view.
Okay, well, I'd like to expand on that governance you just touched on there, but more broadly across the sector and across the whole of EM. I mean, ESG factors have become a major focus for many investors, and particularly here in Europe. Emerging markets would, I guess, on first sight appear to offer considerable challenges in this area.
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting when it comes to ESG. ESG has obviously really taken off over the last 3, 4, 5 years. But for us, it's always been an important part of what we do. ESG has always been really key in terms of what we look for and we think is particularly important in emerging markets. What we find is that companies that pay attention to ESG tend to be companies that have a strong culture, a real culture of excellence. They're companies that think long term, that don't take shortcuts. They're companies that don't take the same risks and therefore don't face the same problems as competitors. They're companies where employees tend to be much more engaged and therefore much more productive. So all factors that we feel lead to higher and more sustainable returns, and that is exactly what we look for. As you touch on, there are challenges within emerging markets, particularly in terms of data quality. And we do feel that as a result, it's very difficult when looking at emerging markets to rely on third-party providers. For that reason, we feel and we've always felt that it's absolutely crucial that we do the work ourselves, that we meet companies ourselves, but we are focused on all these issues ourselves, and that we're not reliant on other data sources.
Thanks, Phil. That was great. It's clear that the ever-evolving social and economic landscape makes this a hugely compelling asset class. I'm sure that the coming year will continue to bring a wealth of discussion points, so thank you very much. It's been really interesting hearing your thoughts and understanding how you and your team intend to generate returns for clients in what sounds like markets full of alpha-generating opportunities.
Great. Thank you very much, Mike.
I hope you've enjoyed today's show. Please like and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. We will be back next month, where we'll be continuing our focus on emerging markets, but moving on to the fixed income part of the universe. We will be joined by Ashley Kettle from the RBC BlueBay EM Debt Team. If you wish to listen to any of the previous editions of the Unlocking Markets podcast, they are available on our website, www.bluebay.com, or can be found on Apple, Spotify, or Google. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
This podcast is issued by RBC BlueBay or one of its entities. Please check the entire RBC BlueBay disclaimer at the following website, www.rbcbluebay.com/podcast disclaimer. This podcast is provided for informational purposes only. It is not intended, nor should it be intended, as investment, tax, or legal advice. This podcast does not constitute an offer to sell, nor is it a solicitation of an offer to purchase any security or investment product in any jurisdiction. This podcast is not available for distribution in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be prohibited, and it is not aimed at such persons in those jurisdictions. Past performance is not indicative of future results. RBC BlueBay makes no express or implied warranties or representations with respect to the information contained in this podcast, and hereby expressly disclaim all warranties of accuracy or completeness or fitness for a particular purpose. RBC BlueBay is under no obligation to update the information in the podcast or to reflect changes after the publication date. The information contained in this podcast is believed to be reliable, but RBC BlueBay cannot and does not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness. The document is intended only for professional clients and eligible counterparties as defined by the Markets in Financial Instruments Directive, or in the US by accredited investors as defined in the Securities Act of 1933, or qualified purchasers as defined in the Investment Company Act of 1940, as applicable, and should not be relied upon by any other category of consumer. No part of this document may be reproduced, redistributed, or passed on directly or indirectly to any other person or published in whole or in part for any purpose in any manner without the prior written permission of RBC BlueBay or one of its entities.